she cannot unsee what she has now seen. Like, for someone who had no connection emotionally or intellectually, and then to feel this storm of a connection, how do you then unsee that? How do you unfeel it?
Welcome to VoiceOver. I'm your host, Heather Bigley, and I talk to people about the movies that made a mark, that led to cinematic epiphanies. And it's not always the movie you'd expect. Today's movie is Charulata from 1964, directed by Sajid Ray, and adapted from Rabindranath Tagore's 1901 novel Nasanir, or The Broken Nest. The film is about a young woman, Charu, who's married to a much older man, Bhupati. Bhupati has a younger cousin, Amal, whom he wants to encourage Charu in her writing. Amal and Charu realize that they're falling in love. And according to today's standards, this is incredibly chaste, so much so that Bhupati doesn't even notice. But the situation causes all three of them intense pain. The film is known for its ambiguous ending as Charu and Bhupati try to return to their previous tranquility. My guest today is Undrela Mukherjee, who grew up in India and now lives in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where she teaches creative writing at Grand Valley State University. She is the author of the novel The Dream Builders, published on four continents in 2023. I totally recommend it. It's a kaleidoscope exploration of modern New Delhi. We're going to pick up our discussion where Undrela is providing some much needed context for the movie. Stick around after the discussion for more recommends.
We have to understand that these women at the time were married to their husbands at a very young age. Like, in the book, we are told that she was a child bride, and at some point she grows into a woman and Bhupati doesn't even notice. They are often closer in age to the husband's younger brother. So Amal and Charu are around the same age. Amal is 23. Bhupati is 35. By the way, there were autobiographical elements in the book. Tagore had a very close relationship with his own older brother's wife, Kadambari Devi, and they shared a love of poetry and art. And she was just 2 years older than him. He got married at 23, arranged marriage. His wife was also 9 or 10 years old at the time. And a few months later, his sister-in-law committed suicide. And no one knows why, but it's strongly suspected that this haunted Tagore and led him to write the book. So it was common for the younger brother to be of a closer age than the husband. And there was a companionship there where they almost grew up together. It is traditionally quite acceptable for them to be close and to have that sort of borderline, very affectionate relationship, which, seeing it through a contemporary lens now, does feel quite a little bit flirtatious. But that was acceptable at the time. Did it often cross the boundary? We don't know. I don't know. You know, I think it's likely that it's been explored in this film through a lens of art and literature. It certainly highlights the isolation of the wife who had to get married at such a young age before puberty. And you can see Bhupati's, the way he treats her is very affectionate, very indulgent, but a little paternal. Whereas with Amal, she can tease him and talk to him like a friend. They're equals and contemporaries in a way that she and Bhupati absolutely cannot be.
Talk to me about why you chose this movie.
I don't remember exactly when I watched Charulata, but of course, Ray is an iconic figure in Bengali culture and art and cinema, and probably the most celebrated filmmaker who's come out of India. And his legend, reputation, everything sort of loomed large over us. Charulata was a movie that really I found so poignant, even as a young person. And then I have to say that I was in England studying for my master's in English, and one of the courses was a course on tragedy, and we had to read the tragic novel. Almost all of the novels that I found myself reading were novels where a married woman was in love with someone else. Anna Karenina, Madame Bovary, Jude the Obscure, Lady Chatterley's Lover, like a long list. These novels are about infidelity, but that is not where it begins. That's not the cause. That's the effect of a lot of other things. And the universal theme of marriage as a sort of essentially patriarchal institution where women were concerned, especially in the 19th century, and how, you know, unfulfilled they were or how lonely they were. And we see Charulata in that situation. And really, that's what leads to the other things. It's not the other way around. There's a trigger. And I remember I wrote a paper on the tragic novel that dealt with adultery. And I also discussed Charulata. So I revisited it because I thought, well, there's so many common themes here, but, you know, it's a similar time period. There was something about the Bengali sensibility that was familiar to me, the sets and so on, the songs from Tagore that are in the film. Ray has actually said that this film was very Western in its themes when he made it. They hadn't dealt with this kind of relationship very much before. And ever since then, when I've rewatched it, I get something new from it. You know, there, it is such a nuanced and textured film. There are so many layers in it. And it's just so beautiful. Visually, the cinematography and the use of sound, the way it's shot and framed. There's a delicacy and elegance about the film, which really appeals to me aesthetically and to my sensibility. And I also love literature that is like that. It's like a poem or a painting. And it's the quietness that I think appeals to me. So that's why I chose it. But also the themes are very, very important. Charulata is the lonely wife in English, in the movie version, whereas the book, Noshtonir, is actually called The Broken Nest. So there is a slight distinction there because Ray made quite a few deviations from when he adapted it, which is really interesting. And also the movie is about creativity and writing and literature and the imagination, you know, and these two worlds of the rational world versus the world of imagination. And all of these themes really resonated with me. And they're things that I think about all the time whenever I think of the human condition, which is why I wanted to write fiction in the first place.
Let's talk about the opening of this film. I have a quote here from Ray where he says, "I have a feeling that the really crucial moments in a film should be wordless." And the opening of this film, there's some music, but the characters aren't talking to each other, and it's to emphasize the isolation of our main character, Charu. I thought it was breathtaking what I was watching, and I thought it did such a great job of explaining to us what the whole problem is.
It's one of the most beautiful openings of a movie. And Ray wrote an essay on Japanese cinema, which was titled Calm Without, Fire Within. And a couple of critics have used those words to describe his own filmmaking, especially Charulata. It so well sums up what this movie is about. His aesthetic in filming it reflects what's happening in the movie, which is all of this unspoken emotion and unspoken tension. When the credits go up, the first thing we see is just a pair of hands embroidering. So she could do embroidery, she could sing, she did all the feminine traditional things, and that's not enough for her, obviously. The symbolism of the handkerchief, which comes back later, the opera glasses through which she looks out at the world, I mean, the objects that Ray uses in the film as symbols, her isolation and loneliness, her perspective on the world. So she's confined. We never see her go outside, but respectable women didn't really go out alone at the time. It's a long scene and there's so much going on. So first of all, she calls out to, you know, the servant and says, take Bhupati, take the tea to the office. So she's like looking out for him, has to do all the wifely chores. She's thoroughly bored. She takes one book. She doesn't like it. She gets another one. And the opera glasses are the most interesting thing because she actually looks out at the world, which she cannot participate in. And she is going from window to window, flying from window to window, almost like a bird, as critics have pointed out. So we see what she sees, and it's through the slats in the window. It's a very limited perspective. But she uses the opera glasses over and over in the film. It's almost like, so she sees Bhupati with her naked eyes and he can't even see her and she's disappointed and you can see all these emotions in her eyes and her face. And then she looks at him through the opera glasses because it's almost like she can see something. It's like an epiphany. She also looks at Omul through those opera glasses at one point of time on the swing. And it's like she realizes something when she is looking at these men. And it's the female gaze. It's really interesting because Ray said, you know, there shouldn't be any doubt about the fact that Charulata is the main character in the movie. That was sort of arguably not the case in Tagore's novella, which begins with Bhupati. And I think the opera glasses are a way of giving us her perspective. And what does she see when she looks through them? She may not see the Bhupati that the rest of the world sees, but when she looks at him, she realizes something and, you know, she really sees him in that moment. And it continues because then she starts to play the piano and she looks around the room and the house is beautiful. It's so ornamental and so lavishly decorated, like an upper class home at the time. And she is another ornamental thing in the house. So the loneliness and the boredom and the isolation, the fact that her husband really ignores her or is unaware of her presence, though he is a good man and he cares about her, but he's just clueless. All of this is established long before Omul comes onto the scene. The whole movie is about, I think, silence and subtext and nuance and what is unsaid and unspoken, which I think is the most beautiful part of the movie.
I have like 17 reactions to what you said, but I want to talk a little bit more about that scene in the garden with the camera where she's on the swing and the camera seems to be almost in her lap, right? And we just see this freedom from her and this delight. She's not even writing at this point, but she just feels like she's connected to someone who allows her to be herself.
Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite scenes in all of cinema. The swing scene. It's just so, so lyrical and beautiful and beautifully shot. And again, in the book, it's several times that they go out to the garden. It's where the imagination kind of is freed and takes flight, right? In the garden, they actually start writing, both of them. You know, she's struggling with her writing later. She doesn't know what to write about. And she goes back to the swing. And that's where she starts to remember her childhood village and decide what to write. So the garden is where their imaginations flourish. It has that sort of fertile atmosphere. But even that swing scene where there are no words, she's just singing, she's humming the words to a Tagore song, and the lyrics of the song are also kind of reflective of, you know, flowers are blooming today in the breeze. What is this yearning that my heart feels? You know, there's an awakening. It's like almost a whole minute that we watch her face as she's swinging. And the expressions on her face are just amazing because she's not speaking, but you can see her expressions change constantly. And I think Charulata, the thing about her in this movie is that she is incredibly self-aware and introspective and obviously intelligent, but also she becomes so aware of her own feelings while she's sitting on the swing. You know, she glances at the flowers and the leaves and then up at a window and she sees a woman with an infant child. And that sort of triggers something in her. She realizes something when she sees the mother and the child. And then she looks at Omul again through the opera glasses and she sees him and she seems to understand something about herself. Maybe what she's yearning for. Not so much him, but whatever it is that she was missing, which he represents, right, and fulfills. It's just really evocative and beautiful and poignant. You can feel the longing for the connection. And the fact that this longing will never really come to anything, it's such an impossible situation, is what makes it more poignant and more heartbreaking and more beautiful. But if you look at the other theme, it's where the creativity begins for Omul and he starts to write. It's blank notebook. Blank notebook represents so many things like a new chapter, a new beginning, but also like what is unspoken and unsaid. And then he starts to write. And it's really about her, though. I feel like Omul is such a secondary, minor character in this scene. And even in the movie, the men are.
So talk to me about Omul. How do you see him in the movie?
I'm glad that you asked about Omul because he is played by Soumitra Chatterjee, who is, again, one of the legendary actors in Bengali cinema. He acted in many of Ray's films over and over again. It's easy to forget him almost. He is like a catalyst more than somebody who's, we don't see his broken heart the way we see the other people's broken hearts. If you watch the movie carefully and just focus on him, he actually is a sensitive guy. He tells her that you should write about your village, and he remembers everything about the village that she had told him. He is interested in her as a person, in her memories, in what she thinks of his writing. And he is very impressed with her writing. And he acknowledges that he didn't expect it. He underestimated her. He doesn't ever seem to, in the movie, really openly sort of flirt with her or take advantage of her. But it's a tenderness that grows. Again, it's all unspoken. And he does leave quietly. It isn't act of some sort of sacrifice. He actually does care about his cousin. He worries about him. He cares about him. And you realize that he's a decent person, and he's very young. But what is the most attractive about him, of course, is the fact that he's a poet and the fact that he loves literature, and he's always humming and singing, and he's musical, and he's this romantic figure. What is most poignant about him? When she cries, you know, on his shoulder, or when he first realizes how she feels. I mean, all of those, he never confronts anything. He never vocalizes, but there's a quiet understanding. And how can he not understand? He's a writer. He's a reader. Of course, he understands. He understands the human condition. This guy comes in and he says, life is like a river with its ebb and flow and the rhythm. And, you know, and I mean, he really believes it. Who can she talk to? Who can understand her? You know, he's the only one who sees her. It's resonance. And it's somebody seeing you and understanding you without having to say anything. But by the end, there's a quietness and stillness about him when he leaves. It's so sad, that scene in the dark, when he leaves in the dark. And you can feel his loneliness too, and his solitude too, because he's leaving his family. And where's he going to go? And he's going to marry another young girl he doesn't know and go off abroad maybe. His future is uncertain. It might seem more exciting because he's away, but it's also lonely, I think. So at the end, they're all lonely.
I want to get to the ending eventually, but I do want to talk about this attitude that Ray has towards Charu that is so much more understanding than Tagore might have had. I haven't read the novel. You'll have to tell me what the difference is there.
And I think partly what film adaptations do is they take a more contemporary perspective. Tagore was also quite a very progressive, women-centric. You know, he was very sympathetic to Charu in the book, but the book begins with Bhupati, and I feel like it's a book about his tragedy as much as her tragedy. We do see Charu suffering. She's very tormented. But we also see Bhupati suffering terribly. The title suggests that he feels like, it feels like a joint tragedy, right? Like the couple's tragedy. And the movie centers her more. And there's something very feminine about the sensibility of the movie. I'm totally like gendering the filmmaking techniques, but just the fact that it's so, the elegance of it, the quietness of it is how the women were supposed to behave, right? They couldn't speak, they couldn't say what they felt, and nor does the film in a way. It lets you infer things from very quiet gestures of filmmaking. This book was written in 1901, and the movie was made in 1964. And people have also criticized Ray in turn for his depiction of women, that they are in the end always contained and they cannot break free ultimately. So there will always be more to do. But I think just depicting her inner life the way he does shows that he's interested in what she's thinking and how she's feeling, even if he cannot necessarily determine her fate at the end or change it. And he did say in an interview just a couple of years after Charulata, he said that the director's responsibility is to show all the aspects of a situation, good and bad, and leave it to the audience, to the spectator, to decide how they feel about it. It's the belief that art is a mirror to life, not a lesson. You don't have to tell people what to do or how things should be done. You just tell people how things are. And they are tragic in these situations. That's what we learn about the society. And that's what makes it so heartbreaking and beautiful, rather than somehow find a way of changing reality and giving them a happy ending. Maybe that's not the purpose of cinema, certainly not according to him.
So the ending is notoriously ambivalent, right? So essentially, Bapati has realized that his wife is in love with Amal. He sees her sobbing in her room. He doesn't say anything to her about it. He leaves. It is really heartbreaking for him, too. He brings out that handkerchief and he stares at that handkerchief. And then he comes back into the house, and she reaches for him and he reaches for her. And then we freeze frame on their hands almost touching. I've been told I'm an optimist. When I saw that, I actually had this moment where I thought, maybe this is when her husband realizes she's a person and is going to start acting like they have a marriage. Maybe this is the time when he changes how he's been treating her. And okay, her heart is broken over another man, but that doesn't mean that she can't now have a stronger, better, more intimate connection with her husband now that they've realized that she's an adult with emotions. I, in fact, find this movie adult in the way that it says, as a person who is married, you are still attracted to people. You still find people interesting. There's still some sparkle, right, around someone that you meet. What do you do with that? And Charu is in this situation where she's faced with it like every day at breakfast, right? Like she's got like the person that she's in love with is like 3 feet from her all the time. But for the rest of us, like, am I making any sense here?
You are, but you're so much more optimistic than me.
I am. It's wonderful. I mean, yes, I'm very optimistic about this. But you tell me what you thought.
I thought the opposite. Because, okay, so I feel like, of course, you know, people are married, they're not dead and so on.
Yeah.
But that's a different situation, right? I don't think infidelity, even though it doesn't exactly occur, maybe emotionally, it certainly does in the movie, right? Doesn't exist in a vacuum. It comes from somewhere. And in this movie, it is very clear right from the beginning that Charulata is not happy in her life. And her marriage is her life. She does not have a connection with her husband. It's a loveless marriage in some ways. They have a sense of duty and responsibility and obligation, but there is no emotional and intellectual connection. And this is emphasized over and over again by Bhupati's dismissal of literature and the arts. And he says, I have no time for such pursuits. I mean, who needs drama and the novel and poetry? I have politics and I care about what's happening in the British parliamentary elections. And their sensibilities are so different that there is a complete disconnect. But in the book, Amal already is there, is present. But in the movie, he arrives like a storm. Literally, he comes with the storm. He is the storm. The situation is just ripe for a catalyst like this to shake things up. And he is this disruptive force of nature, and he is going to disturb the peace. The only moment that really gave me hope was when they go to the seaside and she tells him, let's start a new newspaper and you can take care of the political side and I will do the cultural side and it'll be bilingual. And it's like the male and the female version of their worlds coming together. And she is so empowered and it's going to be a partnership. And they go home and then there's another storm. And with that storm arrives Amal's letter. And that is like a signal that she cannot unsee what she has now seen. Like for someone who had no connection emotionally or intellectually, and then to feel this storm of a connection, how do you then unsee that? How do you unfeel it? And that's why she sobs, because right after the seaside scene, it's like, it didn't work. You know, she tried, but it didn't work. And that's why, I mean, the ending is so powerful. He comes in and yes, she says, come. And she wears her sindoor, which is the mark of a married Hindu woman. And, you know, she gets the slippers for him again. I mean, if you have to look at the expression on their faces, he just looks devastated, completely weary. There is no trust. It's not that he doesn't trust her, because I think he feels bad for her. He knows what she's been through. He doesn't blame her. But he doesn't trust that she can really love him again, or if she ever did. And why don't their hands touch if they're going to reconcile? The fact that, you know, it's a freeze frame and you see these stills, you see her face. It's a strange expression on her face too, and his face. And then you see a long shot zoomed out with the servant holding up the lamp and down the hallway and their hands. And, you know, then the words of the book are shown on the screen, The Broken Nest. And it's the first time that that title is shown on the screen, just as their hands are not touching. And what does that suggest? I think it's open-ended. I think it's really beautiful. I don't think a happy ending would have made this movie a beautiful movie, at least not for me. So certainly on the optimism, pessimism spectrum, we might be a little different.
Yes. Well, and I don't think of it as a happy ending, but I think there's room in there for there to be a better life for these two.
Sure. Yeah. I'm just drawn to sad endings and bittersweet. I mean, I think it's at best, it can be bittersweet, right? Yeah. Especially in a society like India, where people were trapped. They had no choice in who they married. And I think that's the thing, right? Charu didn't choose who she married. Having to stay with him is always going to be a compromise for her, I think, emotionally and intellectually. And then again, she might 30 years later feel like this was fine because, you know, Amol was such an irresponsible, you know, storm-like figure, personality. Maybe she's going to mature into that. But the writer in me and the romantic in me is not able to find much joy in that reconciliation. And I don't think that the movie signals that it's going to be happy. It's certainly not going to be easy. The last freeze frame and the shot and the look on Bhupati's face, I mean, it's very heartbreaking for him too. I feel sorry for both of them, not for Charu, but for both of them. Incredibly sorry. I also think this is about imagination and love for literature and a certain sensibility. It's about having an inner life. It's that kind of connection that people do without all the time. They compromise on that all the time. So I think it's a tragedy because she doesn't have the connection with the person that she's married to. That's the tragedy.
Thanks to Andrilla for pointing me toward Charulata. I've seen a number of Sajit Ray films, but not this one. If you've never seen any films by Sajit Ray, let me recommend his first film from 1955, Padre Panchali. Gorgeous cinematography helps tell the story of young Apu and his relationship with his older sister Durga, as their family faces poverty, illness, and the tensions of living within an extended family. The film is beautiful and bittersweet and foretells Ray's greatness. If you're interested in more films that examine child marriages, I recommend the animated short Sitara, Let Girls Dream, about a young girl in Pakistan. One of the producers is Gloria Steinem, and the last title card announces that today, 12 million girls are still given away in such marriages. Child marriage is not specific to any one religion or race or region in the world. In fact, white girls here in the U.S. are forced into child marriages. This is because child marriage is indicative of rigid patriarchal cultures where marriage is understood as a way to increase male status, as well as strengthen social and political ties, especially for those in poverty. Sitara covers some of that in its very short length. If you heard our episode on Earth, you know we talked about Deepa Mehta. She has another film that I think is important here, part of her Elements trilogy. It's Water from 2005. It's about a child bride who is then widowed at the age of 8 and is sent to a widow's home where her spunk and innocence galvanize the women around her. That's our show. I'm your host, Heather Bigley. Voiceover is a production of BYU Radio and is edited by Spencer Boyer.